Listen to the voices of our world. Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. In contrast to the lyrics of Auld Lang Syne, we're not letting old acquaintances be forgotten. Join us as we reflect on the past year and revisit some of our favorite guests from 2005.
Pure democracy.
The disenfranchised of the world are not the debtors, but the creditors.
Democracy permeates our lives. The idea of one person, one vote. The ability to have our voice heard and respected. In Argentina, for example, democracy and respect were crucial ingredients in the rise of the occupied factory movement. So here's Naomi Klein speaking about that movement and her documentary film, The Take.
The film is about people responding to this crisis in their lives, the crisis of unemployment, the crisis of capital flight, by just taking what they need and insisting that they have a right to work and they have a right to dignity, that they have a right to survival. Unemployment was in the 30% range. Half the country was living in abject poverty. Bosses said, we're closing down the plant. And they just said, well, we're not leaving. And they occupied their factories and they kept them running. More than that, they started to make legal arguments that they actually were the owners of the factory. And they made these arguments mostly to the state, because at this point, the factories were usually in bankruptcy, which meant that the state took control over the assets. But workers are always the last to get paid in these bankruptcy proceedings. And what happens is that you have a bankruptcy trustee put in charge of the factory, and they sell off the assets, and then they pay back the people who are first on the list, and they make their way down, and usually workers don't get paid anything. The workers in Argentina have been making a legal argument in the courts to change the bankruptcy law so that they get paid first, and that they get paid not with money, but with the machines, so that they can keep these assets productive, and that they can then in turn pay the suppliers and the other creditors. The other legal argument that they've been making is that in Argentina, like in so many parts of the world, including the United States, there is a tremendous amount of corporate welfare that is handed out. Corporations are enticed to set up with all kinds of incentives, tax breaks. Often a factory would be given free land. They would be given free utilities. They would build a road for them. I mean, they would do all kinds of things. So what the lawyers in this movement have been doing is tallying up how much public money has gone into these factories and finding that in most cases, more public money has gone directly into these factories than private money. So they're saying, well, whose factory is this? Why should we accept that we're going to lose this factory that we have built as a community? And they're keeping them running and they're transforming them into workers' cooperatives. So when workers in Argentina do a takeover, they call it La Toma, the take. So that's why the film's called The Take. What's most interesting to me about the occupied factory movement is that they are making sure that they don't repeat the mistakes of former Soviet states, where you replace a private boss with basically a state bureaucrat, who are the elite, even if they're using the rhetoric of socialism. So they are insistently democratic and making all of their decisions in assemblies. And when people do try to come in and take them over, often the democracy in the factory keeps it in check. I think that what makes them different, because it's not a new idea that workers should seize the means of production, is their deep, deep, deep faith in democracy and insistence on it.
Democracy at the end of a gun.
Supporting the troops is more than that magnetic bumper sticker on your car. We need folks to get involved and understand the issues.
One of the reasons given for the war in Iraq was the introduction of democracy to that society. In this segment, First Lieutenant Paul Rykoff reminds us that the soldiers fighting the battle abroad need our involvement. Here's U.S. Army First Lieutenant Paul Rykoff.
When I got back from Iraq, I figured there would be other veterans groups and other people talking about the issues surrounding our war and how it affected us and our families, and there really wasn't. So I bound together with a few other vets who were concerned about the way things were going, and we founded Operation Truth, which is now the largest Iraq veterans group in America. It was also the first. And we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan veterans advocacy group that is really trying to take care of its own. We feel like the American public is largely detached from this war, and we want to inform them as to what's going on over there and then also give them action items so they can get involved and affect legislation and affect nonprofit organizations that are doing good things. Because supporting the troops is more than that magnetic bumper sticker on your car. We need folks to get involved and understand the issues surrounding the veterans' hospitals, body armor, the way our families are treated, and you know, a multitude of other issues that are really wrapped up in this war. And there's a real, I think, dangerous detachment that's going on now between the military and the civilians. And we're trying to bridge that gap and bring those people closer together so they can better understand each other. So we are a nonpartisan organization, and we're trying to focus on policy issues. We're often at odds with the White House and with President Bush, but it's not because he's a Republican. It's because he's the president. If George Washington himself were in the same situation, we'd have to hold his feet to the fire and also hold the Democrats to the fire. Everybody in Washington is responsible for this war and responsible for making sure that it's fought logically and sensibly and with all the resources at our country's disposal and that the American public's informed as to what's going on. So it's a tough fight, and we are often slammed by both sides, and I think that's a sign that we're probably on the right track. And a lot of people are interested in trying to make lemonade out of the lemons that we've been dealt.
The soldiers of democracy.
That's why I'm speaking out about depleted uranium, because I've been lied to by my own government. And they still haven't recognized that I've been exposed to depleted uranium.
Every day, U.S. soldiers are putting their lives on the line in Iraq. Unfortunately, when they return home, some are finding that the government does not always have their best interests in mind. Listen to what Iraq War veteran Herbert R. Reed has to say.
Guys from my unit started coming back injured, and as we started talking, we had the same symptoms, you know, the rashes or sexual dysfunctions, the headaches, joint aches, not being able to sleep, feeling dizzy, nauseous, sensitive to the light. Then our medic came in and said that the area that we were staying in had been tested by the Japanese and the Dutch and had been found unlivable. It was contaminated with depleted uranium besides asbestos, rat droppings, bird droppings that we knew about. Well, we went to the Army. And we asked if there was a test for depleted uranium. The Army told us that they would check into it and get back to us. They later came back and told us that there was no test for depleted uranium and that they would send us to see a psychiatrist or something like that. So we started making phone calls and going on the internet, and we did find out there is a test for depleted uranium. We reached out to the Daily News, Juan Gonzalez, and he came down to Fort Dix. We met him off the base, and we told him our story. And he went back to his producers, and they agreed to pay the bill for the testing. And when we got the results back, we were further amazed. And we took this to the Army and said, look, this is what we have. And all of a sudden, there was a test, and they wanted to test us. So that's why I'm speaking out about the depleted uranium, because I've been lied to by my own government, and they still haven't recognized that I've been exposed to depleted uranium.
To this day?
To this day.
Can you tell me how you were exposed to depleted uranium?
To the best of my knowledge, inhaling it, eating it. When you came into the compound, to your left would be picnic tables. Well, that's where we ate. And the road right next to it is where all the vehicle traffic came in and out. And as they passed by, they would just kick up this dust. And this dust would just be one big cloud, and it'd settle on you and your food. So we breathed it in, we drank it, and we ate it. I think the first Gulf War, they used like 375 tons of depleted uranium rounds. In this war, they used something like 2,200 tons of depleted uranium rounds. And every time this stuff hits a vehicle or another tank and it burns, it leaves little minute particles that are like ceramic tile dust. And when you breathe it in, it stays in your body. It never goes anywhere. It's like heavy metal. And when the wind blows, it travels on the sand. And that's how we were we were contaminated. You know, we inhaled this stuff.
Democracy's Voices.
Wars today are so awful in their consequences for human beings that no cause that I can think of can justify that kind of cruelty.
Free speech is a cherished facet of our Constitution. Some believe it is our duty to exercise that right by voicing criticism and dissent. Howard Zinn has spent the majority of his life doing just that. Here's well-known activist and author Howard Zinn.
There have always been protests against war, and they will continue. And yes, only occasionally in history do they actually result in bringing a war to an end. I mean, the Vietnam War was a rare moment in American history. But in fact, we are seeing right now more and more Americans turning against the war. And, you know, a lot of people are very discouraged because they see the power and ruthlessness of the Bush administration and its insistence on continuing the war in Iraq. Yes, when the war began, 70-75% of the American people supported the war in Iraq. Today, it's less than half. And it's moving in the direction more and more of opposing the war. And I think a certain point will be reached where the government, much as it wants to continue that war, will not be able to do so. It will not find the recruits. It will not find enough soldiers. There will be more desertions. There will be more refusal of service. Already, they're having a great difficulty in replacing the soldiers who come back from Iraq.
You yourself were a bombardier at one point in World War II.
Yeah.
In your own philosophical judgment, is there a good war, a just war? Can that be?
I don't think so. At one time I did, obviously, because I enlisted in the Air Force. And, you know, I saw that it was a war against fascism. Fascism was evil. And so, yes, I believed at that time that it was a just war. Today I make a distinction between a just cause and a just war. That is, a cause may be just. For instance, doing away with fascism may be just. Stopping some nation from invading another nation may be just. But does that mean that just cause should be turned into a just war? Does it mean that war is the solution for whatever there is? I don't believe that anymore. I think the nature of war today, being a massive and indiscriminate killing of people, the fact that wars today kill more civilians than soldiers by far. You know, at the time of World War II, it was a sort of 50-50 ratio between civilian and military dead. By the time of Vietnam, it had changed, and the ratio was like 5 civilians to 1 military. Today, the ratio is even more skewed than then. Wars today are basically wars against innocent people, against children. Of course, I should add that soldiers are innocent, too. And wars today are so awful in their consequences for human beings that no cause that I can think of can justify that kind of cruelty.
So was there a show segment last year you particularly enjoyed? Or maybe a subject we didn't address that you want us to touch on? Email us. Go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.